Hello, Yes But Why listeners, this is your host, Amy Jordan. Thanks for tuning in to episode 234 of Yes But Why podcast, my conversation with improviser Jay Villanueva. But first, a bit about our sponsors. This episode of Yes But Why podcast is sponsored by Audible. You can get your free audiobook download and your 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/yesbutwhy. Audible is available on your iPhone, Android, or Kindle. Download your free audiobook today at audibletrial.com/yesbutwhy. This episode of Yes But Why is also sponsored by PodcastCadet.com. Podcast Cadet is dedicated to helping you build your podcast. We will connect you to the resources you'll need to get better and better with each and every episode. Swing on by PodcastCadet.com to get help for all your podcasting needs. Let us know you heard about us from Yes But Why, and you'll get 20% off the workshop or service you buy. This week on Yes But Why, I interview Jay Villanueva, improviser and educator from the city of Manila in the Philippines. In our conversation, Jay talks about all the different styles of improv he has experienced in the Philippines and abroad. We chat about PowerPoint presentations, improv festivals, and superpowers. I now present to you Yes But Why, episode 234, Jay Villanueva and the Evolution of Being an Artist for Life. Enjoy. I'm Amy Jordan, and this is Yes But Why podcast. Yeah. What was the first performance or creative project that you did where you were like, yeah, this performing theater thing, this is something I want to do all the time?
I can point to three actual points when that happened. I grew up as a very timid child. When I say timid, I wasn't really confident of what I could do. So first time that I joined a speech contest, that's one third of that decision. And then when I got into theater where I played bit roles, then that's the second one. And then when I discovered improv in college, that's when it solidified that, hey, I can do this-ish, but let me see how it goes first. So let's just say that it wasn't a single point in my life. It's one that had to be reinvented and reinforced as we went along. Because again, when you grow up in the Philippines, it's always like, what are you going to do when you grow up? Oh, why don't you become this? Why don't you become that? And when you say, I want to become an artist, people just stop and then say, why? There's no money in that. So that's like, okay. So it's both disheartening and challenging. But again, as someone who grew up in a very, very old-fashioned household, I could say that it didn't happen all at once. It had to be a decision that I had to make later on in life. So that's that.
Yeah, I hear you. I suppose it was nice that you had the opportunities to do some, you know, theatrical work when you were younger so that you could, you know, at least get the taste for it. But it can be hard when you don't have the support of, you know, your family and or, you know, culture in general.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's certainly getting to that point, too, in the COVID world where I'll see these terrible things where people online are like, oh, I mean, what are artists good for anyway? What does it even matter? And I'm like, you couldn't have gotten through the day without so many artists. Like, there's no way. Like, you can't even wake up without, like, come on, get out of here. No. No,
yeah.
It's like they take it for granted so heavily and like look down on it, you know,
And true, then it's true. Like, you need this. This is your life. Everything you want to do and be like is art. Like,
and life itself is art. Because no one can weave the pattern of your own life except you. So the way that you live your life is an art. And that's something that other people should be able to realize. That we don't just, we are art. We be art. I use that term. Yes. We are art. We are beings of art, and we are artful beings. And people always take that for granted because they become consumers of art instead of producers of art. Then they wonder, why am I living this dreary life? Because you just allow yourself to be taken out of the equation. You don't reinvent and remanufacture the energy that is given onto you. So people don't realize that even industrial design has to have that feeling of art. Otherwise, the industry of design and the use of design, which is artful and scientific at the same time, is forgotten. And then it just goes down to utility or something like that.
Yeah, totally. I mean, it's like two hands, you know what I mean? Like,
yes.
You can't just cut off one hand and be like, I didn't need that hand anyway. Like, no, you needed them both. You just don't use the one as much as you use the other. I'm sorry, it doesn't make it better or worse.
Yeah.
You know, like, but the idea of, I really love the idea of we are artful beings. I think that is really, first of all, I was going to react with like, that is such an improv thing to say. And I love it. And I like, can't wait to dig into that. I'm like, yes, every moment, no mistakes. Yes. And, but also with reference to sort of like the, you know, historical in your life and current sort of political backlash against the arts, it's like, guys, relax. Like, try to enjoy yourself. The reason why you're so mad about the arts is because you're not enjoying them. Like, they could be giving you a better time. You could maybe be happier. I'm just throwing that out there. A little music, good times, you know?
And one thing that I realized as I was growing older is that the more exposed you are to art, then the more you appreciate what you don't think as art. For example, ergonomics, like how comfy your chair is, could be a result of very good design, or it could be a reason of very artful manners of work. Because I'm seated right now in a chair that's really comfortable, but I appreciate how people sat down and made decisions, both for its design and for its without thinking that what they're doing is art.
Yeah, so, right. I mean, how many startups hire me to teach them improv workshops because they're trying to add creativity to the workforce? Like, it's necessary, guys. Yeah. Absolutely.
And waking that up is one thing that I want to do in how I teach or in how I well, we can get to that later, but go on.
No, it's
so
okay.
This is how okay. No, because for those who do not know, I'm a high school teacher. So I'm a high school science teacher. And a lot of times when people say that, why are you, well, I don't have a knack for pretty PowerPoint presentations. It's very utilitarian. But the way that I do my presentations, for example, the way that I choose how to put the lines in, people think that it's not flairy enough or it's not pretty enough because it doesn't have this. When they think of design, it's usually like what to put there. But for me, design is also what not to put there or what to hold back so that you can see whatever is there, something like that.
Right.
I don't know. People think it's weird, but I think it's just, you know, for me, it's tasteful.
if you have a method to your madness when you're, you know, teaching a group and it seems to elicit results, then hey, I say go for it.
Some people don't see that. Some people just say, as you go along and as I grew older, I just realized that I can't change everybody's mind. So, you know, I'll do me and you'll do you. So, yeah.
Yeah. And the other thing is that, like, you wouldn't want everybody to be the same. And you wouldn't want, like, the way that every even from a student's perspective, like, even if it's, like, just down to the students that are probably moving from room to room, teacher to teacher, in high school, right? And then they come to your class, they love what you're doing, right? They've got your... They're into your vibe, and then they go to another class and that teacher's different, right? That's the whole, like, I feel like when they make students, like, have different teachers in high school, it's kind of like, check it out. It's the spice of life. Different people.
Yes.
This is what real life is. You got to deal with different personalities.
And in the US, when they move from classroom to classroom, then it's different classrooms at different times. In the Philippines, it's the teachers who move from classroom to classroom. So the environment.
That's so much better.
So the environment doesn't. I think it has pros and cons. Like, if you move from classroom to classroom, like if the student moves from classroom to classroom, it sets the tone of the new movement. Whereas in my country, when the teacher comes in, you have, because they're in the same space, you have to also do something to change the space so that it is better suited to what you are going to do. So good and bad, good and bad.
Yeah, you have to, like, it's like a stage and you just have to follow somebody else.
Yes.
Oh, man. Ooh. Well, I hope your set order in your daily teaching is pretty good. You don't have to follow, like, you know, the Phantom of the Opera or something. You're like, yeah, I'm just gonna play a few songs on my banjo. Thanks, guys, for your amazing show. Oh, man, how'd they get that chandelier in here? Anyway,
or competing, you're going to sing the same song against the Mormon Tabernacle Choir. So yeah, that's going to be like, that's a tough act to follow. Hi guys, this is me on my kalimba. So,
you're like, those guys, right? Man, okay. Anyway, so here I am. Oh, that's so funny. Man, so let's see. Tell me about your first improv class. You mentioned that was a turning point for you when it came to embracing performance. I am clearly in love with improv. So, like, tell me, where did you find it? What was it? Like, how did it? I didn't find it until I was 30, and I don't know how old you are, but somehow I feel like you're younger than me. So, like, how did it happen for you?
Okay. A funny thing, the main reason why I love improv so much is I don't have to memorize lines. A director once told me, you're never going to get into theater if you can't memorize lines. And I said, I can memorize lines. I just take a lot of time to do that. I'll tell you about it more later because it directly helps fit into my improv philosophy of sorts. Anyway, in college, the choices were so limited. It's either you do scripted theater, in English, scripted theater in Filipino, in my national language, and then you had the choir, and then you had dance, and that was the only option for art. Or I don't know how to paint. I don't write well, so that's out of the window. So, looking at my choices, I said that this is very limited. And then I got introduced to a group that called itself the Bibliothek Improvisation Group. And when I stepped into the room, just to hang out, just to see how things were, I was blown away by the fact that these guys didn't have any script. These guys sang songs from musical theater that they adapted to the situation that they wanted to show on stage. It was vaudeville and seriousness at the same time. So if I could be part of this, this was interesting enough. I realized that these people didn't also know what they were doing. And weirdly enough, that's when I realized that, hey, this is art, but it's very spontaneous. So I loved that. And I never looked back after that.
So was that group having open auditions? Were you able to like get involved with them?
That group was a group in college that never knew what they were doing was improv.
Think
of it this way. We hang out, we talk about situations, and then we say, okay, if we're going to play out this situation, how would it look like? And then it started from there. So it was devised work mm-hmm. at the same time as exploration or exploratory work. Mm-hmm. And reading up on improv groups that formed in Chicago or in other places, they didn't really know what they were doing too at the start. Fast forward 2 decades later, I see people doing improv the way that other people were doing it, and I said like, okay, that was the thing that we were doing in college. We just didn't have a name for it, and then we realized that when we called ourselves the an improvisation group, it was actually that. The reason why we called ourselves an improvisation group is that we didn't have budget, so we used the costumes that we had. We used sheets. We used whatever was available there. And being in a teacher's college, most of the time we were laughed at, both because we were funny, because we did not have budget to actually have costumes. Because to be able to really capture people's captures people's attentions. What happened was that we borrowed sets from the classrooms that were available, or we just made spontaneous performances somewhere. So it was that kind of improvisation group.
Did you guys have a following? Were there people who were interested in watching you guys wherever you ended up doing a show around campus?
No, we didn't, because everybody was still in that idea that when you were in theater, you prepared for it with a script and you had a set and you had lights and that. We would start singing underneath a mango tree or something, or totally. we would start scene somewhere, and then it almost felt like busking, but without the coins being thrown into the guitar case. So it was more like that. We were trying to do an art form that wasn't established, and we had problems seeking approval for our shows, because when people ask us, what is it all about? It's about life, or it's about this situation that we're having right now, and like that. So what is it about? Can we look at the script? How do we know that what you're going to perform isn't, you know, bad? And we couldn't give an answer to that. So yeah. that's now, looking back, that's where we actually felt a tinge of ridicule, because this isn't a real quote-unquote art form, because you're just making things up.
Sure.
And we're like, now look again, fast forward 20 years later, I consider myself both a teacher and a professional improviser. And now doing that, I can look back and say, okay, so I've been doing improv for more than 20 years now, if I count my college days. So
that, you know, the college story of you and your friends sitting under a mango tree singing songs is so romantic. Like, it's just like, we didn't even know we were artists. And it's like these kids just like riffing with one another. I mean, riffing's the best, right?
Yes.
How many friends have you like just made, even in adulthood? Adult friends are hard. But if you can riff with somebody, I'm immediately like, what's up? We're in it. You are my friend now. Like, what's going on? So it sounds fun.
There's a second step to that. When in the Philippines, you riff and then you eat. After eating, then you're friends. So it's two things. You riff first and then you share a meal. Once you've shared a meal with somebody, then you're friends. So, yeah.
Well, it sounds like you and your group of friends were with each other all the time. So I'm sure you did all those things.
Well, in college, yes. But we drifted apart after college because, well, sure. When you go to teaching, then you have to focus on teaching. You have to focus on like 120 plus kids, and you grow apart. But after a few years, we said like, hey, we can come back together, and like, we don't perform anymore. When we graduated, the group fizzled out. They didn't have any members to support them anymore in college, or in the college where I went to. But yeah, now we're closer than ever. So
you and your college friends have reconnected?
The group, yes.
Oh, that's so great. Yeah. That's so nice. Yes. Now, when did you reconnect with them? Was it like you guys started your teaching careers, and then once you kind of got to a comfortable place, like, okay, I can do this, then you reconnected?
We kept in touch as going forward. However, knowing that we are, we have families now, or most of us have families now, and some of us are in different parts of the world, we reconnect when we can, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. I have made connections with old friends since COVID so much more. Like, people that, like, you know, like, we're all, like, friends on Facebook, you know, where it's like, I got 40,000 people, and I'm like, yeah, I think I went to elementary school with that person. But, like, I don't really know them, right? But like, when everything kind of shut down, all of a sudden I was like sending messages out to like my friends in high school, like, are you guys okay? How's everything going? Like, I hadn't talked to them in years, but it was like, you know, I wanted to make sure everybody was okay and just sort of connect and be like, I care, okay? I care.
Yes, yes. And even the constant nudge, like, hey, how are you? And then people would go like, good, 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 good. Or now it's even shorter. It's like emojis all around. It helps. It helps.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, man. A good, a solid GIF. And I'm done for the day. I'm like, oh, good. The internet's done for me. I'm going to turn this off. This is great.
Yeah.
Oh, man. So funny. So after college, so this was the first improv you did, but you didn't know it was improv. Now, when you say that, I want you to know that I've interviewed people all over the world, and I feel like it's one of those things where, like, people are meant to do improv. And, like, so even if there isn't a person who's like, by the way, here's what improv is, they, like, find a way to do it. Because, like, you know, I've talked to people where they're like, it's just right now, it's just me and my friend and nobody else in the town knows what it is. And I'm like, keep it going, brother. You're going to be great. You know, but like, how did it solidify? Did you, when you got out of college and you started working, did you like find a school that was doing, you know, sort of organized classes? What was your development?
Okay. After college, I tried to stay in theater by getting into bits and pieces like the school production or working with some people. But there was this thing that I really kinda didn't know how I could do that. Because focus on work, teaching is very tiring, so you know how it is when your teacher tired. Then In 2013, that was, well, I graduated college in 1999. So in 2013, I got into this accident, which was really bad. And because I got to realize that, hey, life is short. So I tried going back into theater. I tried going back to taking workshops, in the Philippines, but this wasn't for improv. This was for regular theater. And again, I got that note that if you cannot memorize lines, you will never be able to make it in theater. So I felt bad and good at the same time because I know I could do something about it. And then the Manila Improv Festival happened. So there's this group called SPIT in Metro in Manila, the Silly People's Improv Theater. They're a really good group, and they've been performing. They made this Manila Improv Festival, so I went there, and I was blown away by the idea that there is improv. There is improv around the world, and this is something that I've been doing when I was in college. So now there's a bigger community, that there's this community that could, that nurtures these kinds of things. And it was actually called improv. It wasn't called device work. It wasn't to develop a different skill. It was a skill in itself. It was an art form in itself. So the following year, an audition popped up for a group called One and a Half Men. And then a friend of mine, or a former student of mine, said, kindly check this out because this might be something that you're crazy about, yet you don't know how to get into. So I went to the audition. I was the oldest one there. Apparently, they were looking for people that are either in college or young professionals. And I wasn't young anymore. I was like, what, more than around 30. Yeah. So I was 35. Right. So I was the oldest one there. Yet I found the same jive as the group. And luckily I got in. I was the oldest member of the group. It's still around. We're still performing together. We're fast friends. They know we became fast friends. And my story, my professional improv life went through from there. Then through One and a Half Men, I found out that SPIT was actually putting up a school. Now it's known as Third World Improv. And I got my first improv class, my first formal improv class, which wasn't in a workshop, which wasn't in a festival, through Ding Dong Rosales of SPIT. So I still look up to him as my improv dad, because he was the one who started me into that, who tweaked it in that direction. And then, yeah, it goes on from there.
So when you were at when you saw the improv at the Manila Improv Festival, how many different countries did you get to see perform? And like, were there different styles that you saw when you went there? Because that's like mind blowing.
Yeah. I was able to go there and watch, Pirates of Tokyo Bay, that's from Japan. But there were Americans also there. There were people from Hong Kong. There were people from all over Asia. And there were two people. I think there was a group from Korea. And then the people that come from the US who come over and perform, who came over and also performed there. Not to mention the different groups in the Philippines, that there were groups in the Philippines who actually were performing. And that's where I first met people from One and a Half Men. So yeah, it was mind-blowing at that time because, again, this was happening. And this was happening because there was a storm in Manila. So classes were suspended and I was able to attend as many shows as I could.
Oh my God. gosh, what a chance encounter.
And that's what I said. The universe has conspired to make this possible. So yes, this is something that I could say yes and to.
Yeah. Oh man, totally. I try to be more like that in my life. You know, when wild things happen where you think, this is terrible. This is not what I wanted at all. And then you're like, maybe it is. Maybe you should stop rejecting the gift. Maybe you should find a way to make it work, you know?
Yes.
I don't want to hear no but. Oh, give me a yes and, right? About everything, about your whole life. Every tiny little drop of it. Man.
Yes.
Oh, wow. And what a dramatic, like, turnaround for you. You hadn't done it for a while, but this accident kind of got you into the mindset of, like, getting back into your creativity. So I'm so, like, yowza. I hope you're okay. I mean, you seem okay. But
yes, I am.
But like, you know, what an amazing thing to have the opportunity to go to this improv festival and like have access like to watch the global improv community. You know, I talk to people all over and so I wonder what your style of improv is, right? So like I've heard there's improv that is trying to be funny, you know, trying to do jokes and bits. There's short form, which is like the games with the person who's like leading it, that kind of thing, and more short like audience participation stuff. And then there's the dramatic stuff that I hear a lot more of in like Europe circles. Do you guys intermingle those things? And then also, you know, when you were describing your improv group in college, I was like, I definitely know some like sketch groups that definitely write that way, where they're like, what if this happened? And then they like play it out and somebody takes notes while the other people are doing the scene. Like, you know, your style was like, you know, real and like you were channeling it from the earth. But what do you do now?
Currently, because everybody in the Philippines is still in the exploration stage of what they like and what they don't like, or what are the boundaries of improv, or what's their favorite style. So currently, after 5 years of doing this professionally, I'm kind of the guy that you throw into anything, but I will support you. I am the B character of all B characters. I'll be your best friend. I mean, even if you say, no, I'm a B character too. No, I'll be your best friend and you'll be the star of this thing. That's how I play usually. But, if I can describe my improv style or my playing style, it's in FPS. It's in frames per second. So, I was talking to David Escobedo the other time, and I said that my way of improv is by giving you an open palm, and then recently I got into a class where improv was treated like an open palm with sand in it. So that's a really nice metaphor for how I do improv. It's never too tight, so that the sand just bursts out of the edges, but it's never too open that everything will just flow away. So what I do, I call it frames per second. My improv is frames per second. It will depend on how I am, who I am playing with today. So I appreciate it if, let's say, for example, we're going to do a jam and then people just mingle. Filipinos love food, so there's always food in the corner. And then we just start eating lumpia or something. And then we can say, okay, we're going to play like this, and then we're going to play that. I teach improv to high school students. I started the first high school improv group in the Philippines, or high school improv club in the country. So when I'm teaching it to kids or to high schoolers, I teach the fast improv, the gamey improv. Yeah. But if you're going to ask me to play with someone, I've been doing some duos on Zoom, and I realized that on Zoom, it's a world building thing. So I'm a very slow player when it comes to duos on Zoom. the first time I went to the States, I went to improv theater to take classes, to take the narrative improv workshop, and I fell in love with it. So anything that tells a story is something that I would like to do in improv.
At improv theater in California?
Yes.
Awesome. Tell me about that. What was that experience like?
Well, jet lagged. It was very jet lagged. Sometimes I couldn't help it, but because I arrived a couple of days before the workshop, I didn't have time to adjust. So in the middle of the scene, I would like space out, and then they would go like, "Jay's in the Philippines again." Okay, so it was really, really good. And it made some of my questions, or it answered a lot of my questions in improv. And when you're playing slow, these things happen, and it doesn't make the other things wrong. It just gives you more toys to play with. So that's how that experience led me to play better, depending on who I'm playing with. That's why they call me the B character of all B characters.
Yeah, you know, it is pretty great when you think about the slow play and how you're able to take stock of what's going on. When you say frames per second, do you mean that you are cognizant of like each tiny movement and you're like moving slowly, you know, slower than time exists when you're in a scene?
Remember the accident that I was telling you about earlier? When I just before I flew out of the bus that I was riding in, I saw everything in slow-mo, and because of that, I got this sense of sorts that when I am, or when I do improv, everything stops. You know that feeling when even sound becomes quiet and you just hear your heartbeat? That's when I know that I'm in the scene already. And that's when I know that, hey, we are in a different world. We're not on stage. We are two people in a relationship, or with a relationship with each other. I have my opinion about it. I bring something to the scene. You bring something to the scene. And it's just like, My favorite metaphor is like when you have two bubbles and then they become one big bubble. So that's that. You reach that point.
Yeah. So when you are teaching, do you teach adults as well as high school students?
I teach. I don't want to use the word teach. I'd rather I tutor. Or I accompany them through the improv experience. Yes, I do teach, or I do accompany adults too. And it's very different.
The style that you're teaching, or that you're leading them through. Tell me about the style with the adults.
For adults, it's more, they ask more questions, but it's actually because of fear. Rather than, you know how it is when you're teaching kids, or when you're teaching high school students, they do like, let's do it again. But for adults, it's more like, I'll see if I look cool first, or let's take this slower. So it's actually a slower, more deliberate process, because technically you're breaking down walls, or you're coaxing them out of a blanket. And then, okay, this is improv. But we have to like be a little vulnerable, not too much, but yes, vulnerable. Yeah. And then a little more, and then a little more, and then you'll find them like, why are you not here? We're out drinking. Okay, so then they become comfortable with each other.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you teach a lot of beginner adults? Because that's usually what I teach.
Yes, I teach a lot of beginner adults. I just finished my second level one class in this small improv group that I put together to teach improv. And it's funny because I transitioned to online learning quite quickly in this improv journey.
Now, since you've transitioned to online, are you getting students outside of the Philippines, or are you pretty much just sticking with the same crowd that you had in your community?
I haven't gotten students from overseas yet. But some people are asking, and I don't know how to give an answer just yet because we're still figuring out the time differences. But definitely, it would be a good option. Except that I always have a disclaimer that this is your improv journey. It's not my improv journey. So, or we can say that it's our improv journey. And at the end of it all, to ask the question, what next, is up to you.
Oh, I love it. It's so like fun and open-ended. And
yes.
And also so totally true. Like, it absolutely is just their own journey. Yes. Whenever I teach my level ones, I like to tell them that there are a few basic rules when you perform improv, but the style and rhythm that you're going to play in is based on the people that are in the room with you. Mm-hmm. And during the 8 weeks of a class, when I am teaching that group, my job is to teach you guys to learn each other. And then, mm-hmm. and then once you learn each other, to practice performing together as a group, because your thing, your magic is your magic, and it will be different in
yes.
with whatever new group that you join, and you have to take whatever lessons you're going to take away from it.
Okay. Yes, yes, of course. And it's also a good thing to remember, because at the end of it all, we realize that we are individuals who agreed to be together.
Yeah. Is it easier now for you, now that you're an adult? I noticed from your graduating college year, I graduated college in 2000, so we're about the same age.
Yes.
And so, like, now that you're older, and I find this with myself personally, like, is the fact that when you were younger and people gave you a hard time about doing art and stuff like that, is that something, you know, you're able to be like, yeah, who cares? Like, I'm doing my own thing. Is that something you're able to brush off, or does it still, do people still go like, oh man, you're still doing that?
Yeah. Right now, I can say that I'm starting to brush it off, because part of my idea about frames per second is, as you go along, you have to start giving yourself permission to do things. So, in the moment that you make a commitment in that frame, in that second, in that moment, you also have to, in that same split second, agree and give yourself permission to agree. So, that's why a slower playing style is my favorite style, or is my favorite style. Because I have to make myself ready to commit to whatever. Right now, at my age, yes, things are a lot better, because I when I crossed 40, I said, I don't have to ask for people as much. Yeah. As I have to ask permission from myself. So I will start asking myself permission and giving myself permission to do things better, or to do things more creatively, or to make decisions that will affect me more, because I'm going to be responsible for myself and accountable to myself.
Plus, it's nice that you have a community around you now that is supportive, you know, whether or not your family members are like on board with it, like, you at least have this community of people that you're a part of, that mm-hmm. you are, you know, you all work together and you're all on the same page when it comes to like doing this particular art makes me a better person and I'm going to keep doing it.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So you mentioned that there was a group through which you are teaching, and it's your group. What's the name of the group?
Oh, the group is called Clutch Improv. I chose the word clutch because you can be both a clutch player or just like the clutch in an automobile. So there are two meanings. And I like the idea that improv and science actually can mix. So I use a lot of scientific metaphors when I teach improv or when I share about improv.
Oh, nice. So like your stuff intermingles, your high school science classes and your improv. They share messages.
Yes, they do. Especially now that as a science teacher, I also teach disaster readiness because that's a subject here. So it's very interesting to teach disaster readiness to people who don't have experiences of disasters. So you can use improv to actually put them into situations that could parallel what could happen. And they go like, oh, that's why. Oh, that's why we have to do this. Oh, and it makes more meaning for them.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Yeah. Man, it brings me back to what we were saying up top about how art is so important. Like, yes. It is so important to be able to role play that moment so that you're right. Like, it's not even just like, hey, make sure you do the right thing. It's like, why do we even need to do this? And then you see something and you're like, oh, I see why we need to do this. Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Man. Ugh. Art, once again, helpful.
And if you notice that art, or once you start doing this, you start making better decisions and you make better decisions faster because, again, going back to the way that I look at improv in frames per second, you see it as different tools. And then if this happens, what will this do? And what will happen next? So as you're playing with that in your head, just like in an improv scene, you don't know what you're going to get. So it's a really good tool to help students understand that in life, you never know what you're going to get. So learn how to play it. Learn how to play.
Plus, I think the more you exercise your imagination, the faster you can like envision consequences. You know
yes.
what I mean? Like
yes.
Now that my brain is exercised in an improvisational way, I can, you know, assess certain situations where I'm like, oh no, we need to move that table over there because what if somebody does blank, blank, blank or whatever?
Yeah.
Because in my mind, I all of a sudden can see the action of the whole room and everything that's going on and whatever we're doing, you know, reorganizing. But it's like it literally helps your brain to develop the skills of going through and being able to like understand, like even like honestly, even like fights with my husband, I will not say things I shouldn't say because I hear them in my head first. And then I imagine the whole scenario in my head and I'm like, oh, that didn't end well. And so then I don't say it. Right. So like lesson learned, because my imagination is so like fast and primed, I'm able to save myself from putting my foot in my mouth, you know.
True. And going back to science teaching also, it helps them, or it helps my students think of the magical if. Like, for example, looking at something, if this part was bigger, what would happen? If this part was blown up or made smaller or made lighter or made with this material, what would happen? And they would go into these thought experiments and then they would ask me, what would happen if this happens? Have you had experience? And then I would answer them, let's find out. So that's now another branch of their scientific journey. And it would become more meaningful to them because they went through the journey with me, not just me doing the journey for them or just, you know, giving them the idea immediately. They went through the journey. It's much more meaningful. And then they can pass that on to somebody else. What if we do this? What if this happens?
Yeah, the more open the mind of a scientist, man, the better it is for everybody. the more they're like, okay, I see how this is helpful, but how could I do something else? I feel like that's a wide open creative mind of a scientist is definitely something that, you know, needs to be worked on. I'm glad you are doing the good work to prime these future scientists to be creative, because that's going to be very, very helpful. Very, very helpful.
Okay. Yay. No, so, I'm just happy that people see this as important work, because in the many methods and in the many moments that this happens, voices get drowned out and people will go like, oh, this produces results faster, or this produces more measurable results, rather than, you know, developing a wider base, for example, or igniting more thoughts because of experiences.
You know, the hard part about organized education is that it literally has to be like half indoctrination to like basic job having, and yes, also like teach, like igniting your imagination so that you can maybe pick whatever career you're going to have as an adult, right? Like,
yes.
So a lot of the stuff that you're right is absolutely creative, getting their minds working. You know, they're like, oh, I don't see those results. But it's like, yeah, that's because this is a lifelong situation here. This is not a like next week they're going to take a quiz on it and they're going to all ace it. Like, that's not what it's about. It's about forming a human being, and they're not fully cooked, so you don't know what it is yet, right?
Imagine if I give a quiz and say, next week there will be an earthquake, what will you do? And I have to remember that every one of them will be in a different situation next week. So having students message me when they graduate and say, sir, there was an earthquake where I was, and that I remembered what you told me. And then we all realized that all our tables at home are made of glass, so they won't really help us in case of an earthquake. But do remember that I remembered you when the earthquake came, is such a bigger boost to my ego and to a bigger boost to my feelings, rather than saying that, hey, you're a good teacher, all of your students passed.
Yeah. I mean, plus most of the things that you get in trouble for in high school are actually like character traits that are going to be helpful in adulthood. Like, I'm like standing up against authority. All right, that might be helpful. Like being able to have the confidence to say what you think, that's going to be helpful. Like, these things are not cool when you're 16. Nobody wants to hear what a 16-year-old has to say. But like, if they have the, you know, chutzpah to be doing it at 16, they're going to be fine. Like, yes. I'm like, yeah, he's a troublemaker now, but you know. 26-year-old him will be like solid, maybe a salesman making millions of dollars. You don't know. Like,
I always tell this joke to my students. If ever something that you learn here makes you rich, do not forget us. We'll still be here. Don't worry.
Oh, I love it. I used to make jokes to my class that I was like, if you get an Oscar or an Emmy or something, remember this face. And my first improv class, this one, look at me. Tell them my name. And they laugh. So far, no one that I've taught has like gotten an Oscar or an Emmy yet. But we'll get there. Yeah. We'll get there. But so funny. All right, so I want to ask you one last thing. I feel like we're talking about our students, and that's super great. So I wanted to ask you, like, if you were giving advice to somebody who wanted to do what you do, who wants to do improv all the time and work on this, and you know, maybe has another job but can work it out, what kind of advice would you give to that person?
I'd always say, make as many mistakes as you can. That's something that I've seen cripple a lot of people in making the decisions. If it feels good, try it out. Make sure that what you're doing will make you feel good and will benefit other people. Okay. And if it does, and give yourself permission. Give yourself permission to fail. Because after you fail, then what? Then what? What's next? It's first, then what? Then what's next? So my advice is always breathe in, ask yourself, what if? Okay. Allow yourself to fail, and then breathe out. Then start doing it.
I like the idea of allowing yourself to fail. It's like what you mentioned earlier about giving yourself permission to commit to the moment. Like that permission that you give yourself in the scene is almost the same as choosing, like allowing yourself to fail in real life. It's like, if this doesn't go well, it's going to be okay.
Yeah. So I'm always inspired by the line that I see on Facebook. You've survived all of your worst days so far.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. That's a good one. Absolutely. Oh man, Jay, thank you so much for being on the podcast. I really appreciate all of your stories. It's been really great to, you know, hear about your improv style and the like community that you have. I'm just so excited. Thank you so much for being a guest on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. It was an honor that you reached out to me, and I'm little old me in the Philippines, but now because of your podcast, my story will be heard.
Yes, exactly. That's the whole point. I'm so happy. I want us all, the global improv community, to all come together and be besties. It's going to be great.
Yes.
Thanks for listening to Yes But Why Podcast. Check out all our episodes on yesbutwhypodcast.com or check out all the content on our network, HC Universal, at hcuniversalnetwork.com.